This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Tominville, you'll leave for Spurgeon. Spurgeon almost gave it away. In fact, he did. Buckland with Wheeler, 2-on-1. Buckland scores! Dustin Buckland in overtime, and the Winnipeg Jets win it 2-1.
Saturday, July 25th, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. There you heard Dustin Buckland pop an overtime goal against the Minnesota Wild. It's Richard Pollock, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. Drew Mandel is on holidays this week, and we'll be back in 2 weeks, because next week we're actually doing a Best of show for the August long weekend. But we do have a busy show for you today, even though it is the end of July. Mike Colligan of Forbes Sports Money is going to be on next segment to talk about the business of hockey. We usually have Mike on to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins, but today we're going to look at a different angle with Mike and talk about the game from the business side. Later on in the show, from the fourth period, his debut on Illegal Curve, Dave Pagnotta. And then in the last hour, Kevin McGran from the Toronto Star to talk about the surprising hiring of Lou Lamoriello, the longtime Devils GM, to be the new general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Ezzy, yesterday, it's a big day for you. The big birthday. A formal happy birthday and good morning.
Hey now, Richie, I appreciate that. Had a nice little birthday last night, and You gave me the annual birthday call, and I appreciate that. I got a text from your mom.
Hold on, you didn't answer.
Well, I couldn't answer, but I was at work, and then I texted you back. But yeah, it was nice to get all the birthday wishes from everyone. I thought it was going to be a nice quiet Friday leading up into today's show on Saturday, and then this Lou Lamoriello news comes out, Richie, and mm-hmm. I think I was exactly like you. I texted you when the news came out, and very surprising, because the Toronto Maple Leafs really kept this quiet. And, you know, we hear from various reports that Lou Lamoriello was given permission to speak with the Toronto Maple Leafs before the draft and then made this decision, obviously, within the last 3-4 days. But it's pretty incredible. The Toronto Maple Leafs continue to make the headlines this summer. They just seem to be getting big name after big name down there. And it's definitely caught me by surprise.
It caught me by surprise as well. I want to talk about it more later, Ezzy. I want to start off the show, and you wanted to start off the show, talking about Dustin Buffin, who we heard off the top there, Dennis Bayak calling that overtime goal against the Minnesota Wild, and Andrew Ladd, both of whom, I think you're aware of, have not signed contract extensions. Now, they're both signed for next season with the Jets. However, after next season, they're both free to sign anywhere they like unless the Jets sign them to a contract extension. To this point, some thought that one or both of them would be signed by now. I think the consensus is that Ladd would likely have signed by now, and Buffalo, there may be more negotiating to do there and possibly a trade, which I think would be most advisable. Are you surprised, though, Ezzy, that you haven't heard anything on either front in terms of progress thus far?
I am surprised, Richie, especially on the Andrew Ladd front. And I remember when we were down in the draft, in Florida, and talking to Gary about it, you know, he thought something was going to happen within even a few days of the draft being over. And we really haven't heard much. And this is going to be a very big contract. I don't think you could say, Richie, that this is going to be complicated, because I think Andrew Ladd wants to stay here. We haven't heard anything to the contrary. And I think that Kevin Cheveldayoff and Zinger, they want to have Andrew Ladd here for the long term. So I think it's a matter of coming to that magic number, right? And Richie, you did a great piece that we had up on Illegal Curve that was looking at what is Andrew Ladd worth, and I think you were bang on, as you usually are. And I think that right now they might be a few dollars apart, but I think it's a foregone conclusion that Andrew Ladd will be under contract here for 6 years, 7 years, whatever it is. As far as Buff goes, I think Buff is more complicated, because I think there is a chance that Dustin Bufflin comes back, but I don't think that it's going to be 5 or 6 years, because I think then you're running into problems with the cap in the future. And also Dustin Bufflin, as we've talked about ad nauseum, Richie, mm-hmm. on this show, Dustin Bufflin is probably going to wear down more as his career progresses, yeah, than Andrew Ladd. We've looked at Andrew Ladd's numbers, and you mentioned this in the article. Andrew Ladd doesn't miss a lot of hockey. Dustin Bufflin misses, you know, 10, 15 games a year. You know, I'm just throwing out a number, but mm-hmm. he is more prone to injuries, especially the way he plays. You know, he goes for the big hits and all that. I, you know, should mention this right now. I've said this many times on the show. I do think the Jets should keep Dustin Byfuglien, but I do think it should be on a 3 or 4 year contract as opposed to a 5 or 6 year contract. And the reason why I say that is because Dustin Byfuglien is going to command probably $6.5-$7.5 million a year. I know, you know, I heard the lawman talking about $8 million. I don't know if Buff is an $8 million a year player, but he's certainly a $6 million a year player. And I think if you sign him to 5-6 years, you're going to run into problems when you start to have guys like Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele. We know this, Rich. And then you're going to have even the Nikolai Ehlers and the younger guys that are now probably in. When you're talking about Ehlers, now he's going to be coming off of his entry-level deal, talking about 4 years from now. So I'm surprised that we haven't heard anything from the Andrew Ladd front. But Dustin Byfuglien, I mean, flip a coin. Is he going to be traded, or are they going to sign him long-term? Are they going to keep him and just not trade him through the trade deadline this year? I think there's three options there with Dustin Byfuglien, and I think we'd all agree that there's one option that works as far as getting something back for a player. And if you keep him and you don't trade him, then the New Jersey Devils did that with many players, and doesn't work out, because when you have a talent like Dustin Byfuglien, if you're not going to sign him long term, you want to get something back for him.
You do want to get something back for him. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're talking about Andrew Ladd, Dustin Byfuglien. As you have a question here in the show plan, and that's, can the team afford to sign both of these guys? And I guess my question on that is, well, I think we know they can't afford to not sign either of them. It's a double negative there. So I don't think the money, I'm going to give you my opinion first before you comment on this, Ezzy. I don't think the money is as big of an issue here as is term. And I know they go together. But, I mean, I think you're like Andrew Ladd and the Jets are likely fighting about an extra year or two on the contract. Dustin Byfuglien, Jets might be fighting about a couple years on the contract. Right, and that's the issue. But if they were to sign both players to say $6 million deals, you know, you look at the cap and you're projecting this and that, but who knows, right? What happens if Jacob Trouba, you know, tears his ACL? You don't want him to, obviously, but tears his ACL this year, doesn't have a good year, and has no leverage. Okay, remember, after the RFA, he's got no arbitration rights. Okay, so the Jets could sign him to a 1 year deal, whatever it may be. If they sign, you know, Dustin Byfuglien to a 6 year deal after 2 years, Perreault and Stafford are off the books. Maybe some other young players are in there and pretty cheap. I mean, there is, and maybe the cap goes up. Like, I don't know. I know obviously it has to do with the fact that the team doesn't want to spend to the cap, and now the Canadian dollar, which we'll talk about with Mike Colligan next, is a big factor as well, I'm sure. You know, 25 cents you're losing on every dollar here. But I'm not so sure that's, and you have Connor Hellebuck coming through. It could be cheap goaltending after Pavlik's up, because Pavlik, Stafford, and Perreault are all up at the same time. So, you know, we're looking way down the road there, Ezzy, but that's what, $11-12 million, maybe your young guys fill on non-top line roles, you know, second or third line roles, or maybe your top netminder now, I guess. But what I'm saying is, you know, things change in this game, and projections for players change, that I'm not sure I'd be so terrified about spending the money on both guys now, as much as I'd be, from a money perspective, as much as I'd be worried about their performance. Like, if they were worth it, I would have no issue doing that.
Right, and I think we're in complete agreement that signing Buff to 4 years, it makes a lot more sense than signing him to 6 years. Right?
I agree, but I don't think he'll take 4 years.
Well, if he's going to sign 4 years, he's going to be on the higher end of the salary scale, obviously, right? So if you're signing him to 6 years, maybe you get him for $6.5 million. But if you want to sign him to 4 years, you might have to give him $7.5 million a year or something like that. Eight, again, that seems high, but
on 4 years, though, he probably wants eight.
Right, and I love Buff, and you know that, Richie. On the show, I've talked about it time and time again, and especially
he's
this
most
year.
Most exciting player on the team.
I thought he was the MVP of the team this year. And I realize, you know, in the playoffs, he struggled, and I realize the suspension and all that. But I think that he really embodies the identity of this team. Dustin Byfuglien, he can change the outcome of a game with a big hit. You know, we played the clip at the beginning of the show. You know, he can score big-time OT game winners.
100%.
You know, but he's not a guy that can play number one defenseman minutes. He's not Duncan Keith. He's not Drew Doughty. He is a guy, though, that's versatile, that can play forward if he needs to. I absolutely think he should be part of the Winnipeg Jets going forward. And I think he made himself more valuable this year because starting off at forward and then going back to defense when the Jets had all of those injuries. So I absolutely think you have to factor in that Dustin Byfuglien's arguably coming off his best regular season ever. and the Winnipeg Jets, I imagine, have a salary cap board, you know, in the True North offices where they know what the salaries are going to be this year, next year, and all that. And I agree with you, Rich. Again, this isn't a team that spends to the cap either. So this is a team that has a budget. It's not, you know, not in the New York Rangers or the Chicago Blackhawks where they spend to the ceiling. So they do have some room to sign these players. But again, Rich, you make a good point. Then you're going to have to factor in, okay, well, you're going to have some other players whose contracts are expiring. You know, Pavlik's coming off the books in a couple years. You have to kind of assume that you're not going to spend $5 or $6 million on a goalie. So I think, you know, I think it's going to be very interesting here for Jets fans.
Off the books after this year.
I think, no, again, you know, going back to what we said before, everybody knows Andrew Ladd's going to sign. He's going to sign. It might happen Monday. It might happen a couple weeks from now.
I was under the impression that it would get done and frankly be done by now. What do you think they're arguing over right now?
I don't even know. I would have to think that it's you know, there's a few million dollars left or something like that.
You think it's term or money?
I think it's money. I don't think...
So I think it's term.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I think it's term. I'm guessing. I just think that... And again, they go together.
So just 1 year, probably.
Probably a year or two,
Six or 7 years.
Like, I think you're probably talking about the 5, 6, or 6, 7 year thing.
Yeah. I think you're right, Richie. I mean, when you're talking about Ladd, again, the issues that come up with Buff aren't there. So you know exactly what you're getting with Andrew Ladd.
Yeah, that's a good.
I think maybe they're saying, okay, well, you know, we 5 years. Okay, he's going to be, you know, 35 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, versus 36. I think it'll happen. And with Dustin Byfuglien, I don't, because this has been a topic for us on this show for 3 years now.
For sure.
I think you flip a coin. I think Buff, in my heart, I think the Jets are going to sign Buff and keep him. But on the other hand, you could get a lot for him.
Well, can you? Because if you can
get, I think you could.
If you can get as much as you,
I think you get a first. I think you get a first rounder and a roster player and maybe a prospect. I think you get a lot for Buff.
I think if they could,
you should get a lot.
I think if they could
Buff.
Get that, they already would have done the trade.
It's a good point.
Money's tight right now.
Yep, that's true.
Right, and he's got a 5-team no trade.
Yep.
So take off those teams. Take off teams in your division, which Shovel Dayoff is pretty risk averse. He likely won't trade them in division.
No.
I mean, I'm not saying he wouldn't for a really good trade, but for a coin flip trade, he's probably not doing it.
It's rare to trade in your own division, regardless of what division you're in, right? Mm-hmm. So that even leans more towards the Jets re-signing him.
Well, or maybe getting less than what you just said.
Right.
And again, that's better than getting nothing. And that's my point before we go to break here, Ezzy. Leverage-wise, every day that goes by, Ladd and Byfuglien have more leverage. Every day.
Yes. When you're a pending UFA, you always have the leverage.
Every day. Look at what happened for a week.
Yeah.
Every day that goes by, you have more leverage.
So, I don't think they want to have a situation with Buff where they're in a situation like they were with Frolik. Because I think Buff is a lot more desirable. I think a lot more teams want Buff, is what I'm saying, than Frolik. I think there would be a lineup of 15 teams that want Buff as opposed to Frolik. No offense to Frolik. I just think Buff is a more dynamic player.
He's a more dynamic player. That's 100% right. We'll leave it there. I'm sure we'll be talking about it throughout the rest of the summer. When we come back, Mike Colligan of Forbes Sports Hockey will join us to talk about the business of hockey. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
9:18 on Saturday, July 25th, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg here. We're going to have Mike Colligan on in a moment. But this segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
A lot of people are checking out John Lovitz.
Did you read the article in the Free Press, the Brad Oswald article in the Free Press about John Lovitz? It was very interesting.
Well, Rich, I didn't because I can't read articles anymore because you have to pay for those articles. So I'm hoping that Lawless will actually lend me $17 so I can subscribe to the Free Press.
Yeah, it's in it. John Lovitz was encouraged. He did the reverse. The article was saying he did the reverse in terms of getting to stand up. Usually people got into stand up to get on with SNL and all that. And he was on all the big shows and then he started doing stand up later in his career.
That's interesting.
All right. We're joined on the line. Don't worry. We're joined on the line by Mike Colligan, our friend, to talk about the business of hockey. Mike, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Richard. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, Mike. And we usually have you on to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins, but today we're going to have you on to talk about the business of hockey. And, you know, I want to start off with the expansion and the bids that the NHL took or said they were open for on this past Monday, with only two ownership groups entering the fray and putting the $2 million down payment down, that being Las Vegas and Quebec City. Did the lack of teams that put their name in the hat surprise you?
It's been an interesting process. I think the NHL has at some point sensed that there was significant demand for these expansion franchises. And so they've tried to standardize it a little bit. I think instead of just doing one-off deals with individual owners or cities, they've tried to almost create a public auction. And I think they expected to see a lot of groups stepping up. And like you said, when you start to talk about paying $2 million, though, to put your bid into a hat where you still have no guarantee you're even going to be considered in that group, I think that's where they may have misread a little bit from the NHL perspective. And so I don't think I'm surprised at that, but I think that also doesn't mean that a city like Seattle that didn't receive the bids as we expected, that they're totally out of the mix. I think we've still got a number of options as far as how this plays out. We've got relocation, just a lot of different things that can happen here. And I think the NHL just is maybe guilty of getting a little too overconfident as far as their ability to just have people show up at their doorstep with that $2 million application fee.
Do we think, Mike, that Gary Bettman overpromised and underdelivered here to the owners?
I think if I'm an owner going into this process, I know how this works, and I know that Gary Bettman has a plan. And so if you sense that you are not part of that plan, and we've seen that they've trotted out Bill Foley, and they at the time said, hey, in Las Vegas, this isn't a done deal. We're just letting Mr. Foley gauge interest. I mean, the NHL doesn't do that. So for them to have and let him open the door there and go down that path, to me, said, hey, that's a front runner. And so if I'm considering putting a group together in Las Vegas, I'm saying I've got no chance. I mean, they've already picked their guy. They've picked their horse, and they're going to ride him all the way to a new team one way or another here. So that's a tough thing now, and we'll see what happens with the two groups. I mean, between Foley and Quebecor and Quebec City, I think those are two very solid groups, pretty much ideal with what the NHL looks for. They don't look for extremely wealthy individuals. They look for either large companies or groups of maybe three or four. I think Foley's been able to obviously pull that money together, at least that's what he's reporting. So those are two solid groups. We'll see who else crops up as this process moves into the later stages here.
And you look at the Winnipeg Jets, you know, they go, the Jets ownership here buys the Atlanta Thrashers, and then they have to pay a relocation fee, kind of just a, you know, a created fee by the league to get money in the coffers of the owners. And so do you see, I mean, if teams move, you'd have to assume there'd be that relocation fee again, and probably at a higher number. Is it going to be an issue that the relocation fee may be lower than an expansion fee, or are they going to make them all standard so that nobody gets a better deal?
Yeah, I would actually be pretty shocked if it wasn't lower, because when you're thinking about it, you're buying the franchise, and if you're spending, you know, let's say it all depends on which franchise we're talking about, but let's say you spend $400 million on your franchise to purchase it outright, and then you've got to pay that relocation fee on top of it. I think they may try to standardize it in some sense, but we're talking about very different markets, very different situations in all of these cases. And so I think now the other question is, will the expansion fee be $500 million? Mm-hmm. They've put that out there, and that's out of the mouth of Gary Bettman. Will potential bidders be willing to pay that, especially if we maybe don't have this auction mentality? I think that's a bigger question. But when you look at some of these big markets and the opportunities, at least from a sports perspective for Quebec or Las Vegas, I think $500 million sounds reasonable. If that's what it costs you to get into this league that is limited right now to only 30 owners, that's the big thing. This isn't just a normal manufacturing company. This is sports, and there are guys that will pay significant amounts of money because they're billionaires and they just want to be in that inner circle that we call the National Hockey League.
Mike, we wanted to transition a little bit to the salary cap this year. And as you know, it's didn't go up by much. It's at $71 million. And I know you just posted a piece on your website about the Pittsburgh Penguins salary cap. And we know that the Canadian dollar is very weak. I know because I was just in Florida for the draft and I didn't get much for my Canadian money. But how has the weak Canadian dollar affected the salary cap and specifically the hockey related revenue for those who are a little bit unfamiliar with how the Canadian dollar affects the weak Canadian dollar, I should say, affects how players are paid?
Yeah, it's a good question. When we see that topic popping up a lot now over the last, I'd say, 12 to 18 months, is that Canadian dollar just continues to fall. And even over the last, I think, 2 weeks, it's fallen even more. So it's a big factor. And the shortest version is that we have a league where we've got teams playing in the United States and Canada, as you know. And when it comes to calculating the salary cap each year, it's really based on last year's revenues, and that's in U.S. dollars. So if you think of a Canadian team that's making $1 of Canadian money, effectively that becomes, you know, 75 cents that goes into the pot that we call league revenues. So that's where it becomes a factor when you have big teams like, I think, Toronto and Montreal are the really the big variables in there, where they're making a significant chunk, more than 1/30th of the league's revenues, and it's really getting thrown into a pot that's only at 75 cents on the dollar. That's where it becomes a problem as far as the salary cap goes, because when it comes time to set the salary cap, you say, what was last year's revenue? You make a few adjustments on top of that for potential growth, and that becomes the cap for next year. So we saw the cap this year go up very little. I think next year is actually going to be the big problem, because when you think about what I just explained, how there's a bit of a lag effect as far as last year's revenues influencing next year's cap, I think it even goes further than that, in that think of hockey teams and how they're making their revenue. It's season ticket packages, things that are collected 12 months ahead of that season. So I don't know that has been priced in at this point into league revenues. And so if we see a sustained season now in this 2015-16 campaign where the Canadian dollar is that low, I think that's where we'll finally see the full impact of this Canadian dollar being at that level. And that's where we could see some problems as far as not only the cap not going up, but potentially for the first time under the system, the cap reducing a bit.
Joined by Mike Colligan of Forbes Sports Money. And Mike, on that point, how does the league, I mean, they have their two big television deals, you know, the deal in Canada with Rogers and the deal in the States with NBC, which includes a streaming option and the internet obviously becoming more popular and people watching games on their phones and different things. What's the next big revenue stream to offset the, you know, problems with the dollar?
That's the huge question, Richard. And I think that's where it'll be tough. You know, they're going to have this World Cup of Hockey. And as far as I understand, the revenues from that will not go into what we're going to call league revenue. So that will be a deal to the side, but we'll make both parties some money. But I think the biggest question is, where does the incremental growth come from? I think expansion is the number one idea. And for that pie to grow, you would need both of those teams to be bringing above average revenues and above average business situations to the pie there. So if you can get some incremental growth off of that, get extra exposure elsewhere. But like you said, they've got two long TV contracts that aren't changing. And for good or bad, those are the deals. And I think that's where the league is also pushing. It's a bit of a change from the past, where we saw individual teams get into really big trouble when a team misses the playoffs for a number of years, or the market isn't sustaining it anymore in Florida or Phoenix. The league is really pushing now for more shared revenues, so contributed by and shared by all 30 teams, and that provides a little bit more stability. It protects you and diversifies your revenue streams as far as the U.S. versus Canada dynamic. If that would go the other way, we would see kind of a windfall for the NHL. So I think they're trying to make this league more stable as a whole, so we don't see as many of these one-off situations where teams get into significant financial trouble.
Interesting thing in the States, so there's a class action lawsuit against the National Hockey League for the NHL center ice package, and there was a settlement reached that saw the NHL compromise, quote-unquote compromise, and offer a package of $105 per year as opposed to, I think, $160 for a fan to buy his or her favorite team's games, just that team. Were your thoughts on that that's a win for the fans, or the league was the winner there? How did you read that situation?
It's a tough read. You know, when you think of what's happening in the cable industry now and what's happened over the last few years, I think we're in kind of an inflection point where this whole system that has been cable TV is falling apart. And you have the influence of, you know, in the non-sports side, a company like Netflix that is able to force people to basically say, hey, aside from sports, I can give up my cable package and be totally happy with it. And if I had some way to just get my local Winnipeg Jets games or in Pittsburgh to get their Pittsburgh Penguins games, that would be ideal for people because they'd have their TV entertainment and they'd have the one team that they care about. And so I think that's why this is becoming a topic now is up until now, you really had to buy this center ice package and get all 30 teams. And so the league had effectively a monopoly over that product. There were no other options. And they also had some terms in there that made it actually not very useful for people that were looking to kind of drop the cable scenario, like I mentioned before. They would black out local games. They would restrict your viewership, even if you weren't even in that city, if you were even close to that city, they would black it out as well. I think all of those things kind of set them up for a class action lawsuit like this. And so if you're a fan that doesn't really care about the rest of the league, they just want to watch that one team, and that cable option is really what allows you to do that now, I think it's definitely a win for them. But I don't think this is the end of it either. I think this whole business model is changing. Sports is still doing well under the entertainment, and from a business perspective, it's still a very highly valuable product and things that all of these channels want to be a part of. But I think this whole media market is going through a monumental shift right now, and it's really tough to see even 2 or 3 years from now where that'll be.
Mike, I saw a couple of days ago you were tweeting about the Penguins hiring of Sam Ventura, who, if people aren't familiar with, he runs a statistical analysis website on hockey called War on Ice, and I know you really liked that hiring. I guess the question for you is, were the Pittsburgh Penguins a little bit behind the statistical analysis bandwagon? And I guess, how have advanced stats changed, in your opinion, since last year, which was the kind of big year? It was the summer of advanced stats with all of the advanced stats guys getting hiring, Ty Dello and all these guys.
Well, the one thing that we don't know is, first of all, what these teams are really doing. I think for years, a number of teams were working with stats that the information still hasn't leaked out as far as what they were doing, and I only heard it being around press boxes. And as you guys know, up there you start to hear whispers of what teams are working on, but we don't get the full picture as fans and even as media the game to what a team is doing. And I think second, how teams are utilizing these people. I mean, it's one thing to go out and spend $40,000 and hire a young kid to run stats, supposedly, and you go out and you tout that and you use it even as a marketing tool to say, hey, look at us, we're high tech now, we're ahead of the curve, we're using stats as everyone wants us to. But it's another thing to actually incorporate and utilize the insights that you get from that, or set that person up for success to incorporate their voice into the decision-making process. I would guess that most teams, at least at this point, aren't completing the circle there. They have a stats guy or maybe a couple stats guys on staff, but it's just someone off, even in another city, that's working on some kind of consulting work and seeing if they can come up with anything. But I don't think teams are really doing well with bringing those voices into the room. And then when it comes time to making these really career-defining decisions, if you're a general manager, are they relying on those stats to make that decision? Or are they saying, hey, when it comes down to it and my job's on the line, I still want to trust my gut? And so that's where hockey has not made that full transition like baseball. And I think that will happen over a number of years here, maybe over the next 5 to 7 years. But that said, I think the teams that are going to be ahead of the curve and the teams that decide, hey, we're going to spend money to be first movers in this space, we know that not everything we dig up is going to be super valuable or change the way we think about it, but all we need is one advantage in a sport with such a slim difference between top and bottom. I think it's worth it for a lot of these groups. And so that's what we'll see. I think the Penguins are probably somewhere in the middle there as far as Ventura and your question. But the key will be, how do they incorporate his voice into the broader discussion and decision-making process? There's a lot of people in that front office, a lot of turnover, and I'm not too sure how that whole structure will work and whether his voice will actually become part of that process overall.
Yeah, with Tom Fitzgerald joining the Devils yesterday, and I want to stick with the Devils for my last question, and it'll be a loaded question, Mike. Lou Lamoriello leaves the Devils with Ray Shiro's hiring. He leaves the Devils and is surprisingly hired by the Maple Leafs. So I want to get your take on that hire, but also I want to get your take on the hire as it relates to compensation being given for managers or people, coaches moving teams, especially ones like Lamoriello, who appeared to be pushed out, and the Devils receiving a third-round pick for his services. And also, like the Toronto Maple Leafs, teams like that spending a lot of money on management because they're not restricted in that regard, as opposed to the cap and players when they can only spend a certain amount. What's your take on all of that?
Right. I think that draft pick compensation system will break down, and I believe it was only for the calendar year, so probably by the end of the year here we'll see that go away. I don't think there's enough teams that are happy with how that's playing out. Even if you get a pick once, you feel good about that, but at the same time, it's just creating a very awkward situation for these guys to move to different roles, jump across to a different organization. I think we'll see that go away. But the Lamoriello signing, I thought I'm sure for everyone, was a huge surprise as far as going to Toronto and his style. I mean, we're seeing Toronto, like you said, finally utilize the power and the financial strength and the advantage that they have. I mean, when you are restricted on spending on players, that's where you can find an advantage. And the danger there is that you spend and you bring in all of these not only strong alpha male personalities when you're bringing in the best of the best, but also do you have too many voices? And so as you get to a staff that's maybe 5, 10, 15, 20, I mean, with 35 scouts as they've had in the past there in Toronto, how do you efficiently make those decisions, just as we talked about on the last question? So that will be the challenge for Brendan Shanahan. He seems confident in his ability to do that. I'm curious how Lamoriello will transition his style over to Toronto. You know, in New York or in New Jersey, mm-hmm. he was very close to the vest, always quiet with everything that he did, didn't allow the players to really go out in front of the media much. That's not even going to be possible, as you guys know, in Toronto. And so how does that mesh with the new city? How does he change his ways now that he's, I believe, 72 years old? That's going to be an interesting story to watch, and it's one that I think is either going to work out really, really well or be an absolute disaster. And from an entertainment and hockey perspective, I think that's maybe all we can ask for, is as far as one of the league's premier teams, at least from a business perspective, finally providing some entertainment from that standpoint.
Mike, great job here. Appreciate the insight. Always informative, and we look forward to talking to you soon.
Always fun, guys. Thanks a lot.
Mike Colligan of Forbes Sports Money and the hockey writers for the Pittsburgh Penguins. One of the best. Follow him on Twitter. And one of the best hockey writers out there.
Well, he's our number one guest.
He's terrific. He's great. When we come back, we talked to Lou Lamoriello there. We're going to give you our thoughts on the hiring, the surprising hiring of Lou Lamoriello as the new general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Third segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 this Saturday, July 25th. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg in studio. Alex producing today, doing a terrific job. It's great. Yeah, everybody's just really relaxing here. We're having a good time so far. Before we talk about Lou Lamoriello, I can tell you this segment's brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, the official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Give Les a call. He'll take care of you. You know, the thing about going to the dentist, you can't really talk when your dentist is doing his work, his or her work. In this case, Les doing his work.
Right.
But if he's talking to you about hockey before and after he's doing his work, you can chat about hockey. And what else would you want to talk about if you're going to the dentist?
Exactly. Les would love to talk hockey with you. It's a little bit difficult, too, if you're having a crown put in or, you know, there's that fluoride in your mouth, too. But
true.
Yeah, absolutely. Les is, we'll just, you know, get Les talking about Drew and, you know, he won't stop.
We want him to be able to perform the operation, you know? Not pass out from talking about Drew too much. I heard, Ezzy, you have one of those things that the water squirts in. You just carry one of those around with you all the time.
I put one of those in after every meal.
So Ezzy, I'm going to ask you first because there's nobody else here. Lou Lamoriello, the hiring came as a shock, I think, to just about everyone. I thought it was very interesting that the Toronto Maple Leafs released this information. Not Bob McKenzie, Darren Dreger, all the guys who are as connected as you can get in the National Hockey League. This one went under everybody. Nobody caught this one. Nobody really suspected it. You've been a Devils follower for many years, closer than probably any other team before the Jets came back. I know that for a fact. So you know Lou Lamoriello and the inner workings of how he does things and the trends and all that. How surprised are you by this hiring?
On a scale of 1 to 10, a 12. Really. I mean, again, we talked about this during the first segment for a little bit there, Richie. Nobody really knew that this was coming. And the Maple Leafs, Brendan Shanahan specifically, asked for permission from the New Jersey Devils their ownership group there. Josh Harris is one of the part owners. They asked for permission to talk to Lou Lamoriello. And reports that I've read kind of indicate that Lou Lamoriello wasn't that serious about taking the Maple Leafs job. And as the summer progressed after the draft, to me, there was a few interesting moves that I don't know if they're directly correlated to Lou Lamoriello leaving, but David Conte has been their director of scouting since Lou Lamoriello has really been there. And he was let go, and it's obviously because Ray Shiro wanted to go in a different direction. Does that have anything to do with Lou Lamoriello's decision to leave New Jersey? I don't know. Scott Stevens wasn't brought back as an assistant coach.
Let's be clear. Lou was being pushed out.
That's kind of what I'm moving towards here, Richie, that you know, Lou Lamoriello, someone who was the guy, the president and GM of the Devils for 28 years, 3 Stanley Cups, 4 Stanley Cup final appearances, all of that. I mean, they're really the model franchise as far as there are others, obviously, with the Detroit Red Wings. But, sure. You know, the New Jersey Devils, as far as success goes, are right up there with the Detroit Red Wings as far as the last 20 or so year ago. Obviously, the last 4 or 5 years haven't been that successful with, you know, Kovalchuk and Parise leaving. But the Devils did go to the finals in 2012. I should
Kovalchuk
say that's actually...
Kovalchuk doesn't get blamed for, as far as I'm concerned. The trade was a good trade.
Actually, I should correct myself. It's 5 Stanley Cup final appearances since 95.
They lost to Colorado in 01. They lost to the Kings in
2012. Yep. And then the 3 Cups. Yeah. So the New Jersey Devils are the way they've been run, and you know, you hear about how Lou Lamoriello has run this team. I mean, but Ken Danico had a really interesting quote. We've had him on the show a bunch of times. He said that, you know, you didn't always love what he was doing, but we were winning. So when you're winning, you kind of push that stuff aside. You know, he maybe you don't like that he's telling you to do this. You know, he always made the guys shave and, you know, all of this stuff. By the way, that's, you know, that's just his team policy. But Richie, his record speaks
for... New York Yankees do the same thing.
Speaks for himself, right? Lou Lamoriello's record with the USA Hockey and in the New Jersey Devils, it speaks for itself. They've been a great team. Now, have they struggled and have they not drafted as well maybe as other teams? Absolutely. They haven't drafted as well as other teams, and they've fallen behind. And that's why the New Jersey Devils aren't going to be a good team this year, and they're in a complete rebuild with Ray Shiro. Now, the other aspect of this, Richie, Lou Lamoriello going to the Toronto Maple Leafs, to me is a complete shock because of the current management structure there with Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas and Mark Hunter there. So now you got Lou Lamoriello, who was the guy. And when I say the guy, I mean like he was the guy in New Jersey for 28 years. He had complete control.
Nobody
over,
else.
Over everything, right? Yeah. And you had his son, Chris Lamoriello, who runs the AHL affiliate in Albany. He's not going to be joining him in Toronto. David Conte, there's a rumor that, you know, there's a chance that he might join him in a reduced role.
How does that work with Mark Hunter?
Well, that's the thing, right? And so he might be a pro scout as opposed to the director of scouting. But needless to say, he's not gonna come into Toronto and bring all of his guys in because there's already a structure in place there. So to me, it's interesting because for someone who's 73 years old to go from now kind of being pushed out a little bit in New Jersey, things haven't worked out. The ownership group saying, okay, Ray Shiro is going to be the general manager of this team. You're still going to be president, but you're not going to have the control that you used to. Now he's going to Toronto in a situation where Brendan Shanahan is the guy. And, you know, sure, I've heard that he's going to play a mentorship role with Kyle Dubas and all of that.
He drafted Shanahan.
Yes, he did. We should mention that. Yeah. He did draft Shanahan.
And he brought him back to end his career in New Jersey.
Yep.
Loyalty is a big factor there.
Yep. They have a relationship. Yep. There's absolutely a relationship there that's a personal relationship as well as a professional relationship. I think this is a good move for the Toronto Maple Leafs just because I think Lou Lamoriello will go in there and he'll command the respect.
There's no question that
everyone knows a guy like Lou Lamoriello. Everyone knows what he's done with New Jersey, and I think that especially in a sense, I think, you know, he'll have enough autonomy. I know people are saying, well, how much room is he going to have with all of these other guys around? Kyle Dubas has kind of been tagged as the heir apparent, which is a little bit odd. Like, make him the general manager then. Right?
Yeah, do they think he needs mentoring? And maybe they think he needs mentoring for a few years and then he'll be the guy. And I can understand that because Lamoriello will bring a different perspective and experience, but has he done enough yet to prove that he's capable? I mean, he's taken a different track than other guys have.
Right, and he's 28 years old.
Yeah.
And the Toronto Maple Leafs had a disastrous year. Not to say that he isn't a smart guy because he's done some good things with Sue and the OHL and all that.
I think
but he hasn't
Dubas,
really done much.
Yeah, we don't know yet. We don't know. We know that he seems to be eager and capable. But we don't know. I mean, what has he done? I mean, somebody had a funny tweet that was sent to me that, you know, Lamoriello was 5 Stanley Cup appearances, 3 Stanley Cup victories, 3 Stanley Cup rings, and Dubas went to the playoffs in the OHL once or twice, and they're going to go talking, and he's going to be like, who is this guy? Like, what's this guy telling me? So I want to know who has final say, and I don't know if it's Brendan Shanahan, who doesn't even live in Toronto. I think it's kind of relevant, to be honest with you. Is it going to be Lamoriello with input from everybody else? And are people going to sour in that organization from having their voice not heard as much as they expected? This is what happens, though, when you hire a GM after you've hired 2 assistant GMs and the head coach.
Rich, if you asked me who was the least likely to take the GM job, put it this way, I probably would have said Lou Lamoriello. And that maybe in a way that's a good thing, because they need someone who's more of a senior role. You know, they had Cliff Fletcher in Toronto, someone that kind of plays that kind of role.
Yeah.
So maybe he's not the general manager. He's kind of playing more of an advisor to the president role, really.
What about the coaching aspect? Lou fires every coach. Brent Sutter left. He liked Brent Sutter. Brent Sutter left. Good situation. Wanted to be closer to his family.
Lamoriello on several occasions has gone himself behind the bench.
Yeah, last year. And
which made no sense.
It didn't really make much sense. Pete DeBoer's a good coach.
Or to give Oates or Stevens the head coaching interim title.
Who has he fired?
He's not firing Babcock.
Yeah, exactly. So he's not firing Babcock. So that's a change for him as well. Now, Babcock's very capable. You know how much I respect
you have a
Mike
lot
Babcock.
Of. By the way, Richie, sorry to cut you off just a second here. But, you know, speaking of alpha personalities, you got Mike Babcock, Lou Lamoriello, and Brendan Shanahan.
And then Dubas and Mark Hunter. Mark Hunter's in there. Dubas, I assume, has a voice. I mean, a voice. I don't know what it is. As it relates to those four guys. I mean, it's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And that meal could either end up being perfect or a complete disaster.
This team is in a rebuild, a complete rebuild, Toronto Maple Leafs, especially when Phil Kessel was traded.
It was necessary.
But you know what I mean, right?
Yeah,
like, as soon as you start trading the good players, that was the final chip to fall.
You needed to trade him, though.
You needed to trade him, and you know, we thought maybe even Phaneuf or Loophole or a lot of these guys, right?
Eventually.
The Toronto Maple Leafs, if they don't develop the players that they've drafted, and they've made some good draft picks, and Mitch Marner and you know, William Nylander and all these guys.
We don't know any of these guys yet.
Travis Dermott, defenseman on Erie, they recently signed him. All these players, they got to develop these guys, right? They got to nail these picks. They got to develop them. You know, 2-3 years down the road, that's when we'll really know how this thing is going. Because the Leafs aren't going to be good this year.
Right.
I don't think anybody in Toronto listening is going to be surprised at the fact that I'm saying you're not making the playoffs this year.
No, I mean, can they get Austin Matthews is probably what they want to know.
Well, I think it's going to be between Toronto and New Jersey. I think Toronto and New Jersey are both going to be in the Austin Matthews sweepstakes.
Arizona, too.
Yeah.
Carolina.
Well, they're Arizona for now.
Yeah. Maybe for 2 more years.
Yeah.
Who knows? Disaster there. Complete and utter disaster. I'm not even going to talk about Arizona. There's a moratorium on that on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, thankfully. It's arbitration week in the National Hockey League. We're going to get back to Lamoriello later on with Dave Pagnotta, and then Kevin McGrann of the Toronto Star. We're going to ask him all about Lou Lamoriello. So we're not finished with him. But next segment, we're going to talk about Braden Holtby's new deal and Derek Stepan. What's going to happen with the big-time New York Rangers center?
Well, I kind of am in a New York state of mind right now.
I'm not a rap fan, but I'm pretty sure this song is New York state of mind. We'll talk about arbitration right after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Last segment of the first hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday, as Drew would call it, an icy Saturday. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg joining you. Alex doing a tremendous job producing thus far this morning.
I love talking about hockey. We're going to hit the golf course later. We're going to go see our boy Sean Coe at Toulon.
Before we do that, as I'm going to do a quick read here, and it's relevant to our little golf plan here. This segment's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, if you didn't know that. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat it there in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at Bernstein's Deli. .com. And the reason I do that read there, Izzy, because we're actually heading there post-show.
We are.
On our way to golf.
We're going to head there for a quick bite to eat, then hit the golf course. I was going to say, I love doing the show in Birkenstocks. Love talking hockey in July in Birkenstocks.
By the way, people always come up to me this time of the year and they say, you know, what do you have to talk about? There's actually lots to talk about. It's maybe more than past years, I think.
We might be a little bit light on the Jets news right now. And it seems like mid-July to mid-August is probably the quietest. And then you start to get into, you know, the Young Stars tournament in Penticton and the training camp. But right now, it's all about signings. And when news comes out like Lou Lamoriello becoming general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, that gives you at least three or four segments right there.
Yeah.
No, there's always a lot to talk about. I mean, and throughout the summer, we might be taking next week off, Rich, but we'll be back in August talking hockey leading up to training camp.
Yeah, we should note, I mentioned it off the top of the show and you just mentioned it there, we're going to be on holidays. So once a year, I think we all take the same holiday. August long weekend.
Not together, though.
We're not going to see each other at all, thankfully.
No.
August long weekend, we're taking it off. It's going to be a best of show. So we've selected some of the interviews we think have been the best over the course of the past year. And Drew has already put that show together. So we're looking forward to that. You know, we're hearing some of the interviews that we've done and some of the guests that we had on that were a lot of fun. Dan O'Toole, I think, will be a part of that. I'm not going to give away a lot, but I know Dan O'Toole, I think, made the cut. I'll put it that way. Braden Holtby. You know, you're seeing this a little bit more now. Players going to arbitration and settling right after the hearing, but before the ruling's handed down. But Braden Holtby re-signed with the Washington Capitals for 5 years at $30.5 million. Keep in mind that earlier in the week, in their arbitration brief, the Washington Capitals requested that Braden Holtby be handed down a one-year deal at $5.1 million. And Braden Holtby's representatives filed saying that they thought Holtby deserved 1 year at $8 million. The arbitrator had until today at 1 o'clock to come down with his or her decision. That didn't need to happen because the team, as I just mentioned, settled for 5 years, $30.5 million. And if my math is correct, that's $6.1 a year?
Yep.
What do you think of that contract?
I like the contract, Richie, and I got to say, you know, Braden Holtby this year had a Vezina-like season, played the most games in the NHL, 73 games, 41 wins, was unbelievable in the playoffs for the Washington Capitals, and I really like this Washington Capitals team. You kind of converted me to like this Washington Capitals team. Under Barry Trotz, this is a different team. I really think that this team is only going to get better. They went out and got Justin Williams. They went out and they got TJ Oshie to a team that already has Ovechkin and Backstrom and Carlson and Alzner just getting better on the back end. But specifically here, Richie, Braden Holtby, good Saskatchewan boy. Last year, I think he emerged as an elite goaltender. He was a good goaltender. Mm-hmm. Under Mitch Korn's tutelage, he became an elite goaltender. And for him, this contract, I think maybe he left a little bit of money on the table. You hear that, you know, he might have wanted a few more years and all of that. But 5 years, you're getting $6.1 million a year. You're now being paid like an elite goaltender, right? So you're not quite in that Jonathan Quick, Henrik Lundqvist, Carey Price, because those are the three best goalies in the league, in my opinion. And you can throw in Pekka Rinne as one of the top goalies. But I think he's absolutely, you know, I said this last week, if you want to say he's top five, top 10, I would argue that he's top five. I think Holtby has really emerged, and I think, you know, at 25 years old, he's just getting started. I mean, he's really only played a couple of full seasons. I guess this will be his third full season with the Washington Capitals. And you look at Braden Holtby, and for the Washington Capitals, they needed to get him under contract, right? They couldn't have this go to arbitration and have some type of hearing and this affect his play next year, Rich.
They had the hearing.
Decision.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. Yeah, you're right. They did have the hearing. You're right. I think that, you know, this is a contract that, you know, you look at the cap hit and you say, oh, you know, maybe he should make $7 million. He's that good. They should have paid him that. Well, you know, they gave him 5 years, and he really is just coming off his best season, even though, you know, he was good, but he struggled a little bit the previous year.
This makes him the seventh highest NHL paid goaltender in the National Hockey League. That's about right, isn't it?
Seems about right.
I agree with you, Ezzy. I like Braden Holtby. He's a battler. He's reliable. He can play a lot of games.
Yep.
Mitch Korn has had a great effect on his career, just like he did on Pekka Rinne and other goaltenders in the past. I think that he is part of this new Washington Capitals kind of identity.
Yep.
And I think he's just good.
He's a great goalie. He's got everything. He's not as big as he's got size, but he's not as big as some of the other goalies nowadays. You know, Ben Bishop and all that.
Sure.
He's kind of your typical size goalie, but he's got the athleticism. He's got that battle level, and as you said, he's shown now. Goalies don't play 70 games anymore, Rich.
Mm-hmm.
And he just played 73 games, and maybe next year they want him to play a little bit less, 65, but he's shown this year that, I mean, you could argue, aside from Ovechkin, he was the MVP of the team this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
In the playoffs,
too.
He was incredible. His goals against was under two. And
save percentage was .944 in the playoffs.
He's incredible. And you're talking about a guy who had to fight through some adversity with, you know, they tried to change his style a couple of seasons ago.
And back to the playoffs quickly, Islanders and the Rangers can both score.
Yeah. The Capitals were a win away from going to the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, this was a good Washington Capitals team, and he's a huge part of that. He's a huge part of that core now with Ovechkin and Backstrom. And, you know, we mentioned some of the younger defensemen there, Carlson and Alzner. He's a big part of this core, and I think this team's only getting better. I think, you know, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but I think this is an Eastern Conference contender next year.
Oh, I think for sure.
I think they can go to the finals next year.
I think they could have this year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're in Game 7 overtime against the New York Rangers.
Yep.
They would have given Tampa Bay trouble because of how physical they played.
You've added Williams and Oshie, and you know, and now they've gone far now. They've gone to the second round. I mean, I think this is a team to be reckoned with in the East.
I totally agree with you. I like the way they're built. They have balance. They have good structure. They don't play as much free flow as they did before, but they're still able to create offense. I just think they're going in the right direction.
They've added guys like Kuznetsov and Burakovsky have added a little skill element.
Yeah. Younger
guys.
Not only skill.
You know, not only skill. And, I mean, it's a good team. Trotz is a great coach. Holtby's a great goalie. Like,
Derek Stepan hasn't got done yet. Larry Brooks wrote about it in the New York Post. We're going to talk about it later in the show because we have to go to break. First hour's done. Dave Pagnotta, the fourth period. Your buddy.
Yep.
Making his show debut. To start off the second hour of the show, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Top of the second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, you're listening to TSN 1290. Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg in studio. Drew Mandel is on holidays. We'll be back, not next week, because we're on holidays next week, but the week after that, and you probably don't miss him too much anyways.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
This is the debut on our show from Dave Pagnotta of the fourth period. Dave, how are you doing this morning?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing really well, Dave, and you know, it's certainly been an eventful week in the hockey world, and it seems like every week is an eventful week, but we have to start off with, and you're based in Toronto there, the hiring of Lou Lamoriello. How much did the hiring surprise you?
I'm still surprised. I don't think anybody really expected this one. This totally came out of left field, and a sign of things to come here in Toronto in terms of stuff getting leaked. They were doing a pretty good job already with Shanahan coming in and keeping information for the most part to themselves, but Lou doesn't like dishing out information and wants to make sure everything's quiet. And they did a really good job at keeping this one quiet, considering they went back till I think it was May when they started when Shanahan said that they started talking. So the fact that almost 2 months goes by and not a peep ends up anywhere, that's impressive and certainly, like I said, a sign of things to come. But this is an interesting move for the Leafs. I was certainly surprised. That goes without saying.
Dave, with Brendan Shanahan as president, and then you've got Kyle Dubas there as assistant general manager. You've got Mark Hunter there as well. And then you also, obviously, with Mike Babcock as the head coach, and you know that he's going to have a lot of control of that dressing room. What is the power structure going to be like for Lou Lamoriello? How big of a role is he going to have?
Well, he's GM. I mean, he's the guy that's going to be overseeing potential roster moves. He's overseeing the roster effectively. And overseeing the way that this team is going to be structured over the next few years. Mark Hunter's specialty is certainly at the junior ranks, and he's going to have a say in hockey ops, obviously. But his forte comes with scouting and overseeing effectively the future of the franchise. Kyle Dubas is kind of all over the place. And it certainly seems like he's being groomed at some point to become a general manager much further down the road. And I don't know how much better of a mentor you can get than Lou Lamoriello. But he'll be active on all fronts in terms of hockey. He's also in charge of the American Hockey League team, the Toronto Marlies. So he's certainly dialed into to every facet of the game. Shanahan, by all accounts, will have final say in terms of what moves actually happen, which moves like he had with, you know, trading away Phil Kessel. And if they do end up moving Joffrey Leupel and Tyler Bozak and Dion Phaneuf and whomever else, ultimately it's going to be Lou's job to make sure he can get the best deal possible. And then Shanny, at the end of the day, will give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. But this was a move that without Shanahan, and Lou Lamoriello stated this when during the media scrum the other day, that if it wasn't for Brendan Shanahan, if he wasn't part of this organization, Lou would be staying in New Jersey as president of that franchise. There's a lot of faith that's being put into Brendan Shanahan since he's really joined the organization. And the fact that Lou Lamoriello comes out and readily admits that, no, he would not be part of this team if Shanny wasn't here, is a big testament to what Shanahan brings to the table for the Leafs. And certainly goes without saying, a significant move. People are pointing to the three-year deal that Lamoriello had. He never really had long-term deals with New Jersey. They just continued as they go. And I would effectively think that would be the same case here for this particular situation.
Dave, was Lou Lamoriello pushed out of New Jersey?
It didn't seem like, well, yes and no, I think, to be quite frank. I mean, with the ownership structure that had changed in New Jersey over the last, I'd say, 5-6 seasons, with the turnovers that they had in ownership, you started to notice that there was a bit of a different, overall, a different way that the organization was approaching the way that they just conducted business. The team hasn't been that good lately. They've been handcuffed with the fact that they were going through these ownership struggles, so they couldn't dish out significant dollars. They couldn't re-sign Zach Parise a number of years back. They couldn't go after the heavy hitters in the free agent market, and sometimes had to overpay for other guys simply because those were the only people that they could potentially get their hands on. So Lou actually admitted that there were some handcuffs, and he felt that there were some financial restraints that kept him from doing the best possible job he could, which certainly won't be the case in Toronto. They've got a crap load of money, so they can basically do what they want. I think it was a yes and no situation. I think Lou was ready to leave the general manager's position, which is why they brought in Ray Sherrill. Again, he admitted that if Shanny wasn't here in Toronto, he would have stayed in New Jersey. So I think maybe there was a bit of a struggle there, but it didn't seem like he was pushed out per se.
Joined by Dave Pagnotta of the Fourth Period. Dave, just a quick one on Montreal. We haven't got to that yet on the show this week. Alex Semmens signed a one-year deal. What'd you make of that?
Good deal. Good deal for both sides. High, you know, there's a lot of risk that goes with Alex Semmens based on how he's performed the last couple of seasons. But, I mean, if you look at his numbers, his first two seasons in Carolina, they're not bad. They're pretty good. He put up solid offensive numbers with the team. Everyone's going to point to Alex Kovalev when they brought him in a number of years back. There are certain similarities that are there. Alex Semmens plays when he wants to play. Alex Kovalev played when he wanted to play. So they've got a good base there. Andrei Markov is there. Alex Yemelin. They've got Alex Galchenyuk. A lot of Alexes on that team. They've got a good Russian base of guys there, which I think will make things a little more comfortable for Semmens. And at the same time, especially a guy like Andrei Markov, who is so ridiculously well respected in the Russian community and in Russian hockey in general, I think this is a pretty solid bet for the Habs, and I think it'll turn out to pay some dividends. I don't think he's going to score 40 goals, but I certainly feel like this is an opportunity for Semmens to rejuvenate his career a little bit after taking a big hit last season.
Dave, we're skipping a little bit all over the place here because we want to ask you a little bit about Braden Holtby and Derek Stepan here. Wanted to ask you about expansion too, the expansion bids that came in. And I know that you wrote a piece on thefourthperiod.com about this. Seattle and Toronto obviously didn't put in a bid for an expansion team. The question, I guess, is how early do you think we see a team in Las Vegas or Quebec? And the second part of that question is, how badly do you think the NHL wants to have an even amount of teams both in the Western Conference and Eastern Conference?
Vegas is a lock. It's been a lock for some time. They wouldn't have gone through the entire motions and wouldn't have allowed Bill Foley and his group to go through a season ticket drive if they didn't feel like this was something that they felt comfortable moving forward with. The process is still going to take. It ends September 4th in terms of the overall expansion process and the reviews and the interviews and the going back and forth. At the end of September, we're likely to have a board of governors meeting to vote on potential expansion. It's not set in stone yet, but it looks like that's where this will all play out. Vegas will get a team at the start of the 17-18 season. That's where everybody is pointing to. So not next year, about 2 years from now, we'll start to see that team come into play in Las Vegas. I think it's a formality at this stage. Quebec City is the interesting one. The league really anticipated something coming from one of the three bidders in Seattle. It didn't happen, but they're not out of the woodwork yet. For the most part, this is part one of, from my understanding, a two-part overall process where the expansion process and the bid committee for a lot of different markets can jump back into the mix about a year from now. So they went through this first one. They got their two applicants. It looks like it's going to happen for Las Vegas 100%. Quebec City is the one that will get an NHL franchise at some point, but a lot of people are wondering what's going to happen in terms of some of the other markets like Arizona and whatnot. Carolina's up for sale, but they're seeking local ownership. I don't anticipate them leaving. Florida's owners are stubborn, and they've got a lot of money, so I can't see them leaving either, or we wouldn't have had the draft there this past June. In terms of league symmetry, I'm going to be honest, and the league has been pretty honest as well. They don't care. If there's 14 or 12 teams in the East, the rest in the West, or vice versa, whatever it ends up being, if it's 16 and 16, great. If it's 16 and 17, it's also great for the league because they're going to generate $500 million more.
16 and 17, Dave, don't scare us here.
right, yeah, sorry. Well, look, this is a team that this is a league that's going to 32 teams at some point. If they end up at 33,
oh, God.
God help us all.
I'm telling you, don't be shocked because they really want Seattle to work, and you can't turn down Quebec City money. So don't be shocked.
And they clearly haven't been watching the product because if you're at three more teams of this league, I mean, it's going to be difficult. In my opinion, the talent isn't there to be able to make the hockey as exciting as it is, and you could certainly argue that's not overly exciting now with the amount of goals being scored. But that's me editorializing there. We're joined by Dave Pagnotta of the Fourth Period. Dave, we talked about, you mentioned Vegas, and it's a foregone conclusion. Do you think Vegas will be a success?
I think Vegas will be a success if within 5 years the team is competitive. And Bill Foley has stated that he wants this team to be competitive. He's willing to spend money to bring people onto this team. Now, whether a player wants to join a Las Vegas franchise is that's the other part of the equation. Mm-hmm. But Bill Foley is going to be willing. This is going to be a cap team. This is going to be a team that's willing to spend to the salary cap. By all indications, they're going to have, they're not going to go at it stupidly right off the bat and do what the Leafs used to do and the Rangers used to do before there was a cap and just throw oodles of cash at everybody. But this is going to be a franchise that is going to make it clear once they're in that they want to be competitive right away. And yeah, the first 2-3 years of an expansion franchise are going to be rough. But if after that honeymoon phase kind of takes place, if they're showing some competitiveness on the ice, then I think you're going to see it doing pretty well. If this team after 3 years and moving into 5 years is, battling for first overall in the NHL draft, then nobody's going to care. Yeah, mm-hmm. There's 14,000 people that have put down money or there's 13,000 season tickets that are down from the local community without the help of corporate support. Then that's a great indication. And I know some people that live out there that former Canadians, they live there now, they got their season ticket deposits. That's all well and good. But if the team is crap, nobody's going to come down there. It's kind of like Florida's market. If the Panthers are doing well, and Florida in general, whether it's the Dolphins, mm-hmm. The Miami Heat, the Marlins, if the team's not doing well, then nobody's going to come. as soon as the Panthers started to get down into that playoff race down towards the end of the season, they started to fill up that building. I think that's probably the best comparison in terms of a marketplace for a Las Vegas franchise.
Yeah, and at the very least, there'll be some pretty good pool parties down there for the NHL players. Dave, we got one more question for you here, and we appreciate you joining us this Saturday morning. Arbitration hearings, and you know we've seen obviously the Braden Holtby contract after the arbitration hearing. I guess two questions here for you on Braden Holtby first. What did you think of that contract? And then Derek Stepan, his hearing is scheduled for Monday. Richie and I are both big fans of Derek Stepan's game. I imagine you are too. He's a great hockey player. How do you see that one playing out?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his, and I think this is going to be something that could bite the Rangers in the butt if they can't figure something out pretty quickly here. The Holtby deal, I figured he'd be around $5.5-6 million. I mean, he's 6.1, so good for him. But I kind of figured he'd be in and around that range. You know, the arbitration process is an ugly one. No player, and I was talking to a couple players yesterday about this, one of whom has an arbitration hearing next week. Nobody wants to hear what the team has to say about them. Because, yeah, they're going to compliment you a little bit, but they're really digging right into your game and right into your ego, and it hurts. It's not a fun process at all. So the fact that you go through this and then you go and get a deal done after the fact is kind of bittersweet, because you still hear everything that they say, but at the same time, you know, you get your new contract, and I thought $8 million was certainly a reach, like everybody, but he got his money. Derek Stepan is going to be something that, if they can't figure this out beforehand, I don't know if it's going to be a positive thing for the Rangers to go through the arbitration process with him. He's a hell of a player, and he's only getting better. But this is going to be a really tricky situation for the Rangers that have some cap issues, and it's prevented them from making some additional moves over the course of the offseason so far. This is one that I'm most interested in watching.
Dave, thanks very much for joining us this morning. We'll hope to have you on again soon.
For sure, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Great job. Coming back, we talked about arbitration there. We're going to talk about Bernier, Adam Larson, Marcus Johansson. They got Holtby done up in Washington. They haven't yet got their number 90 up front. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
This is the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Always nice to have new guests on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Dave Pagnotta with a fourth period with a great job there. Second segment of the second hour on an IC Saturday. Richard Pollock in studio, joined by Ezra Ginsberg. Drew Mandel is on holidays. Again, I need a second here to talk about Drew Mandel and those holidays, because he made it up. You know, he's out in Ontario, not like northwestern Ontario, he's near Toronto on a camping trip. But I'm going to get to that in 1 second, because this segment of the show is brought to you by Frank Zappia and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, the official realtor of Legal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com or at 204-772-2100.
Shout out to the Zappias. We're going to have to hit up a patio real soon. We hit up a patio with them about a month ago.
And they had a brisket ready for you to go.
Yeah, and we know that Frank is a listener of the show. Obviously, he's a sponsor of the show. But he's a frequent listener, and he's always tweeting us pictures at the cottage, making brisket and everything like that. So shout out to the Zappias, and we'll have to get together with them real soon. And you know, it's the summer. You got to take advantage of patio season, Richie.
I agree, Izzy, and all the mosquitoes were terrible last night. But
they were. I was out at the Fringe, as an aside. I went to see a Fringe play, and I know people are going to be shocked to that I did something that wasn't hockey-related, but I went to see a Fringe play.
You were in the play?
No, I wasn't in it. I watched it and then went out for dinner and afterwards around there, and the mosquitoes were bad, but
just
a great atmosphere down there, though. So many people out there having a good time, and you obviously by the Old Market Square, you had the mini donuts, which I enjoy. Just a great atmosphere. Go check out the Fringe, because it's on for a couple more days. So
Drew's out of town, and he said, you know, he's going camping. He's on a bachelor party. He's going camping.
By the way, Drew takes a lot of holidays.
He does, doesn't he?
I go away like 2 or 3 times a year. Drew goes away like, it seems like he has holidays every month.
He missed like 8 shows this year. So anyway, he says to me, you know, I'm going to be camping. So I'll talk to you when I get back. He leaves on Thursday.
He has no idea what he's doing.
He's camping. He's been texting me every day. What kind of guy is, what campsite has access to the internet? He texts me, how you doing? It's like, Drew, I thought you were camping. First of all, if you're camping and you have access to the internet, put the phone away.
Part of camping, Richie, is that you are kind of disconnected from technology.
I agree with you.
So if you're checking your, like, you don't bring your iPad to camp. What do you need your iPad for?
That's a good point.
You know, like, if you need to, you know, use Google Maps or whatever, you could easily just have a map.
You just use a regular map.
Yeah, like, part of it, yeah, I agree with you. You shouldn't be, he shouldn't be texting you, how's the show going, Richie? Who do you got booked for the show?
could do the impression of Drew all day. Arbitration cases. KZ, the Derek Stepan case. Larry Brooks in the New York Post writes about
Brooksy.
It. Brooksy. And what Larry Brooks really says is they're in a negotiation here. We're heading to arbitration, and the question is long term. Will Derek Stepan be willing to take a little bit less, like some other guys, on a long term deal on that franchise to be able to contend, or will he want to break the bank? Not that he doesn't deserve to break the bank, because if you know Larry Brooks, you know he's a big proponent of players being paid what they're worth. But as he puts it at the end of his article, it says,
like Bobby Holik.
So the question for the center is whether he's willing to secure his future now by taking less on a long term deal to remain on a contending team in New York, the way Dan Girardi did, Mark Stahl did, and Matt Zuccarello. Well, Jeff Gordon, who's the new GM there, because yep. Glenn Saylor has stepped up, but really stepped away from management,
yep.
mulls a question of 1 or 2 years for arbitration. And just to clarify that, because Stepan declared for arbitration, the Rangers have an option of deciding if they want the contract to be a 1 year deal or a 2 year deal. The problem with the 2 year deal is that leads them right into UFA status, like Bufflin and Ladd are going to have next year. A 1 year deal brings them back to the same situation that they're in this year, which is arbitration again. With leverage, it would have been the same situation as the Jets had with Michael Frolik last year. Arbitration eligible, 1 year before UFA status. I am a big Derek Stepan fan. I think he's a real good player. I think he had a tremendous season. He was great in the playoffs and great in the regular season. He can shoot the puck. I think he is a smart guy. Top six center for sure. You got to pay him, Ezzy.
Yep.
And what are you waiting for? Maybe you're fighting, you know, apparently you're fighting on a deal here. The Rangers are looking at a 6 year deal, this is per Brooks, in a 6.5 to 6.75 range, while Stepan's looking for a 7 year deal in a 7.25 to 7.5 range. I mean, you're talking there about maybe $500,000 a year, right? And you're talking about a 6 to 7 year deal. Now, let's clarify this. We're talking about Bufflin and Ladd, because I think Jets fans want to be able to relate that, right? We're talking about Bufflin and Ladd, who are negotiating their contracts. But Bufflin is going to be 30, and Ladd are both going to be 30,
yep.
right, or are 30. Derek Stepan is 25. So a 7 year deal for Stepan versus a 6 year deal, big difference there. If you're 30 years old or if you're 25, I mean, is a 7 year deal going to be that big of an issue for the Rangers? I don't think so.
No, you make a really good point, Richie, and I think Derek Stepan's almost underrated.
I do agree
for what he does. And you look at his points, and last year I believe was his best year, if I'm not mistaken. He had 55 points.
I mean, that one in the lockout year, he had 44 points in 48
okay.
games. Last year he had 55 and 68.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, he really, it's possible that his best offensive years are to come. Because
that
you know,
is possible,
I know
yeah.
you know, there's always that. There's those stats about how you know the top players like Sidney Crosby. He's never going to duplicate his 120 point season, all that. But I think Stepan really has the ability to get 70, 75 points. I really do. But he does everything, Rich. He can play the power play. He can penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
He's a scrappy guy. He's not huge, but he. You know, you talk about Dustin Bufflin and how he kind of embodies what the Winnipeg Jets are all about. Stepan really has been a huge part of this Rangers identity for the last several years under Alain Vigneault and this Rangers team, you know, going to the Stanley Cup Finals versus the LA Kings. I mean, he was a huge part of that. He's been an excellent player in the playoffs. Fast, good shot. He's smart. I mean, he's a hockey player you want. He's going to be a huge part of the U.S. and you know, the Olympics and the World Cup and all that. Like, I mean, he's a great American player. So I agree with you, Rich. They got to pay him. And to me, I look at it and I don't really know why it's got to this point, because I don't think.
Rangers,
by the way,
kinda,
you know,
the Rangers kind of always let it get to this point.
They
so,
do,
yeah.
But I think we'd probably agree. Wouldn't be surprised if they go to arbitration and then they settle before the decision is made.
There's a lot to lose.
Yep.
And relations, you're talking about 25-year-old center. That's the centerpiece, pardon the pun, of your team for a long haul. You expect, do you want to alienate him in arbitration?
No.
Similar to the Holtby thing.
Especially with St. Louis retiring.
Yeah.
And I mean, you've got Rick Nash there, and Rick Nash had a good regular season, struggled a little bit in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But you know,
trade Rick Nash if they can.
I wouldn't be surprised about that. And you've got the nucleus of your defense and your goaltending locked up. So you're talking Girardi, McDonough, Staal, Klein. I mean, Lundqvist is under contract for long term. But when you look at the forwards, you know, we saw the Emerson Edom for Carl Hagelin trade with the Anaheim Ducks. You're going to have some wiggle room there, Richie, to bring in some free agents. And I think that's what Jeff Gordon knows, that he's probably going to need that money if he wants to lure a free agent there. Because a lot of these players, you know, they have some players locked up long term, but it's mainly on defense.
That's right. The three guys they have locked up long term for the next minimum three seasons, Rick Nash, Matt Zuccarello, Derek Brassard.
Yep.
I think you're pretty confident if your centers are Derek Brassard, Derek Stepan, and Kevin Hayes going forward.
Yep.
Brassard's 27.
Yep. Hayes had a good rookie year last year.
Stepan's 25, and Kevin Hayes is 23.
Yep.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
And all guys can kind of do both things. They can score a bit, and they can pass the puck. I mean, Hayes is predominantly a passer. Brassard can do both, but they can both play make and they can score, and that's a big asset for a team to have, versatile players.
I think you're looking at, Rich, there's going to be a hearing on Monday, and they're going to take that hearing and they're going to offer him a contract based on that hearing.
Larson, Bernier, and Johansson, quickly, Ezzy. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, in New Jersey, it's been reported that they're trying to sign Larson to a 5 or 6 year deal. So I'd be surprised if that one either doesn't go to arbitration, or I guess they don't wait till it gets to the decision from the arbitrator. So I would look for a long term contract with Adam Larson. Johansson, I guess, is a little bit more difficult. I don't know a lot about that one. I mean, he's a good player, but is he in that $4 or $5 million range? Which, you know, because he plays the players he plays with, does he make them? Johansson's, again, I'd say a good player. So I don't know how that one's going to shake out. And Jonathan Bernier, again, to me, the question is he the goalie of the future for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I don't think they know.
And I don't think
arbitration
they know.
Might actually be what is necessary there.
So I think that one is going to for sure go to arbitration.
When we come back, you mentioned the Maple Leafs, Ezzy, Jonathan Bernier. We'll ask Kevin McGrath about that, but we're mainly going to ask him about the surprising hiring of the new Maple Leafs general manager, Lou Lamoriello. Only half an hour left on an IC Saturday. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, back after this.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Just past 10:30, July 25th, Saturday, 2015. Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Alex Albany getting us on and off the air, doing a great job. This segment's brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer, baseball, not soccer baseball, but soccer and baseball, bikes, skateboards, as well as having the city's largest selection of athletic and casual footwear. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. I got my hockey equipment from there, I tell you, and it doesn't make me, maybe it makes me look better. Not necessarily a better player, although if you look better and you feel better, maybe you do play better. I think that's, yeah, we could talk more about that. We're going to be talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs in a second, and as you and I were just quickly talking, the Jays lost again last night.
Yeah, but they're still in it.
Like, are
I
they
mean,
in it?
A couple
like,
games out of the wild card,
yeah,
right?
I think they're 6 games out of the wild card now.
Are they? I thought they were. Oh, no, I'm thinking of, never mind. They're 5.5 games behind the Yankees.
Of the AL East and 6 games not, behind the wild
card. Yeah, that's right.
Houston and the Angels.
Well, it's not the hitting. It's the pitching. It is, though.
It's the pitching, not the, is that the side? What sample episode was that from?
Well, you know this. I mean, Richie, you're a bigger Jays fan than I am.
I
mean,
the
pitching's been inconsistent for how long?
Well, it's
forever.
It's taken so long. It's just taken so long for them to, you know, to be able to even address it. It's like, how much longer are you going to wait?
Yeah, that's a good point. At least at this point in the season, they're still in it, which is nice. I'm still going to watch it, and you know, there's a good reason. There's 162 games, right?
Well, there is a good reason for that. So, Kevin McGrath's not going to be able to join us. Pan Am Games, he's got some issues there in terms of doing some interviews, so he's not going to be able to join us. I'm not going to hold that against Drew, who booked him. No. But Kevin McGrath, not able to join us. Hopefully, we'll be able to get him later on in the summer. Ezzy, that gives us more time to talk about those arbitration hearings that we kind of just rushed through there. And the one to me, and I went on about Larson, so let's talk about Bernier. I think Jonathan Bernier is a talented netminder. I think he's a little bit adversely affected by the fact that there's a lot of pressure in Toronto. And obviously the lack of defensive structure last year. I think Mike Babcock probably wants to get a read on what Jonathan Bernier is all about. Babcock managing goaltenders has always been interesting to me. He can be hard on them at times. Jimmy Howard, I thought, always had confidence problems. I think Bernier at times also faces those same issues. I wonder if this is the best way to go, because I personally think it is. Challenge him a bit. You're not invested in him. He was brought in by an old regime. Bernier was brought in by the old brass. So really, you know, that whole investment theory, you don't have anything invested in this guy. He's an asset which you can turn into something later on. So if you go at him and challenge him and he fails, well, so be it. He was somebody from the last regime and he just failed. Now, you can see where you're going moving forward, because the talent is there, but I think this is an issue of whether or not he is mentally and emotionally tough enough to handle the pressure in Toronto.
Yeah, it's a good point, because in L.A., before he came over, he was with the L.A. Kings, and he had that luxury of not being the guy. He was behind Jonathan Quick, and you come over to Toronto, and it was a situation where they wanted him to be the number one goaltender, mm-hmm. but at times he split time with James Reimer. And this past year, he did play more than James Reimer, but he still hasn't gotten to that level, especially of a Braden Holtby playing 73 games a year, played 58 games this year. And this was a tough year in Toronto, so you can't take this year as kind of the whole sample of his career. But I look at Jonathan Bernier, and he's an excellent goaltender. It's clear that he's got the athletic ability, and he's shown that he can win hockey games in the NHL. And I think you're right, Rich. I think we've seen the best of Jonathan Bernier, and we've seen the worst of Jonathan Bernier. And I don't know if the Toronto Maple Leafs at this point, you know, and this kind of speaks to your point, Richie, that they're in a position where they want to sign him long term. And I think a couple of years ago when they brought him over,
yep.
they probably were looking at it like, okay, yep, he's under contract. And a couple of years from now, we're going to sign him long-term. And I think what complicates things is that the Toronto Maple Leafs don't have someone right now that can really step in as their number one goaltender.
Well, James Reimer has never really been that guy.
No, and James Reimer did an excellent job 3 years ago when mm-hmm. he came in. And you know, I'd agree with you. I think, you know, good Manitoba boy, he's more suited probably to a backup role in the NHL.
He is.
Which is no offense to him at all.
Maybe a 1B at max.
Maybe a 1B.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Devin Dubnyk proved everybody wrong. I mean, the experts,
sure.
and I don't know if we can call ourselves experts.
I don't know what we call ourselves.
But I mean, he struggled.
Probably not that,
and hey, I'll be the first to admit that I was wrong, and a lot of people wrong as far as Devin Dubnyk. Because all you do is base your opinion.
Yes, I mean, how many NHL GMs were wrong about Devin Dubnyk?
But I'm just saying, right? So I don't think I was the only person wrong about Devin Dubnyk. And I think, you know, a guy like James Reimer could prove everybody wrong. Maybe he gets an opportunity in a different market and he thrives, right?
And then a one-year deal with Bernier. I think you go to arbitration with Bernier and you take your chances.
Yes.
And if you upset him and he plays great, well, then you'll deal with it. And if you upset him and he plays poorly, well, then you'll deal with it.
And it goes with the fact that they don't really, I don't think, have never shown an interest to sign him long-term. I think Bernier and his agent during the year were looking for, didn't want to go to arbitration, because I think, you know, Richie, you mentioned, you know, leverage and all of that. He doesn't have any leverage.
He doesn't.
I mean, he's, whatever the arbitrator now rules is what he gets. And I guess the Leafs have the option of rejecting that if it's under a certain amount of money.
I don't see them walking away from an asset. They're not going to walk away from an asset.
No.
They're all but asset management. Just so people know, Bernier last year played 58 games. His save percentage was .912. The year prior, he played 55 games. His save percentage was .923. And the year prior to that, he only played 14 games, and his save percentage was .922.
Yeah. In L.A., he was a backup behind Jonathan Quick. I think you're right, Rich. I think you're looking at Bernier. What is he going to get, $4 million?
Yeah, probably four and a half. Four to four and a half.
Yeah.
Three to 4.6.
The Leafs are going to struggle this year. I mean, the Leafs aren't a playoff team this year.
The one thing is this, Ezzy. He's talented enough, in my opinion, to kind of throw their plan off, I think, for struggling.
Well,
because I think they'd rather struggle this year, trade all these one-year contracts, get something for him.
That's going to be a bad team in Toronto this
year. It will, but I'm saying he's talented enough to have good games and throw them off a bit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and he proved that this year.
There's a difference between being good enough to take your team to the next level and good enough to make them just good enough, you know, just at that level to not get that first overall pick. I don't question his talent level in that respect. I do question once in a while whether or not he has mental toughness to be able to be that number one netminder. And I think the jury's still out. I haven't decided one way or another on that. In my opinion, I don't think we can yet decide that. But I know that he's better than that bottom level for sure. Like he's in the mid-level talent goaltenders. And that might pose an issue for Toronto, who would like to have probably a top five pick next year.
You have to factor in, too, not only was Toronto bad, but the defense in front of him was not good, and
absolutely,
the structure wasn't there. Under Peter Horacek, it was just a gong show there. We've talked about this a lot this year.
He had a .923 save percentage 2 years ago. Same structure.
But the structure...
Better for under Carlisle than Horacek. I mean, Horacek...
Yeah.
Well,
as soon as Horacek came in, it
disaster
was
disaster anyways, yeah.
Everything fell apart. I mean, nobody was playing defense.
We haven't talked about Alex Semin. We asked Dave Pignotta about that from the fourth period. What do you think of that signing?
Well, it's 1 year, Rich, right?
Yeah.
And you can't really go wrong with a one-year contract. Semin is an extremely lazy player. You watch him playing Carolina.
Yeah.
He reminds me a lot of Yashin in the sense that you watch, and he was a high draft pick of the Washington Capitals and came in and played really well with Ovechkin there. But he has this God-given ability. His skill level is just out of this world.
It is.
But he doesn't have the work ethic. And Alex Semin obviously bought out by Carolina because he didn't play very well and he was making too much money. So the Montreal Canadiens bring him in. And even though they need to get bigger up the middle, the wingers are not really what they need. And that's what they have in Semin. But he's a skill guy. And
he's big, too.
He's a big guy. And... You know, David Pagnotta we had on, and he mentioned he's not a 40-goal guy. He could still get 20, 25 goals. And the thing is, Montreal Canadiens had trouble. It wasn't keeping the puck out of their net that was the problem last year. Mm-hmm. It was scoring goals.
Absolutely, right.
And, you know, after Max Pacioretty and Plekanec and Galchenyuk, who struggled at times, they didn't have a lot of other guys putting the puck in the net. And he's a guy, he's a sniper. So, one-year deal, you know, if he makes the most out of it, he'll get another contract. If not, maybe he'll go back and play in Russia.
I think it's a good sign, though, if you're Montreal, that he didn't want to go play in Russia.
No.
He wanted to stay in National Hockey
League. I'm saying...
If he doesn't, he could be another,
you know, Radulov or whatever.
A couple things about him. He might have a top three shot in the National Hockey League.
Oh, absolutely.
There'll be people who tell you in the league, and I personally think he's got a top 5 to 10 shot in the National Hockey League.
Yep.
If only he comes, you know, if only you sign him for the reason that he plays the off wing on the power play, kind of like Ovechkin does in Washington, and then you have Subban shot at the top of the point, and either use him on different power play units or the same, and you have a weapon at the top of the blue line and then on the circle, on the left circle.
I think you're playing with Plekanec.
No, I'm saying like, but on the power play too, like you have two weapons now on the right side, or if you want to play a different structure with Subban, you have two guys. Subban has probably the best one-timer in the league after Ovechkin. Semin's got a tremendous shot. So how do you defend that on the power play? That's been an issue. Maybe Markov helps him a bit. Dave mentioned that. I think, you know, he's lazy. He doesn't play hard.
Right.
He's not stupid, and he's not small, and he can pass the puck a bit too. I think it's a no-lose. If he's, after 20 games, if he's a bad, you know, has a bad effect on the locker room, his laziness, and the coach doesn't like him, then you can bury that contract.
Right.
Right? For how much it is.
Yeah.
It's over $1 million. If he scores, you're going to get great value. Now, you might be concerned and say, okay, how is he going to perform in the playoffs? I mean, with the Capitals, he had 4 points in 14 games the last time he went. He never, aside from 2008-09, and 7-8, he wasn't great in the playoffs. But you know what? I wouldn't be as concerned because he's had some success. And if they get to the playoffs, worry about it then. You want to be able to, you know, get some points in the standings, put yourself in a good position with home ice, different things like that, right?
But you're getting a player who was making $6 million a year or whatever it was for $1 million a year. To get Alexander Semin, a guy who, I don't know what his career year was, it was 70, 80 points
his
back in
the day. His career year was 40 goals. 84 points in 73 games.
And he's playing with Ovechkin and Backstrom.
You're signing a guy who's 31 years old with 238 career goals for $1 million.
I actually was surprised that Semin wasn't signed earlier. I thought Pittsburgh might be an option for him, you know, a little more scoring. But again, yeah, you're right.
He hardly moved. If you watched him last year, like you can't watch last year. And if you watched him last year, you're just like, this is a joke. I mean, the guy's hardly moving out there. He had no effort in anything. Watch him in Carolina. Can you chalk that up a bit to the fact that they were an awful team? Yeah, you can to an extent.
He mailed it in.
He mailed it in.
Yeah.
So does he need to be in a competitive environment? Again, he's not a competitive guy. But you're not paying a lot of it. You know, if he did all those things, you wouldn't be available for this price at this time of the year. So you take your chances. I think we both agree it's a worthy shot. It's worth a shot.
Yeah, it is.
Last segment coming up. Ezzy, we got a little surprise for you coming up next segment. You don't know about it, though. And we also have Rapid Fire. Ezzy put together a Rapid Fire, which may or may not include Drew Mandel. One last segment on Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be back after this.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Little Bruce. As you know that song? I mean, you got to know that song. You don't know the song?
Yeah, it's...
Oh my God. Dancing in the Dark. So I read the Bruce book by, I think it was Peter Ames, I think it was who wrote it. It was a great book. And he wrote the Born in the USA album. And he had written, I think it was 13 tracks on that album, and there was 12 done. And the album has all these hits, you know? So you have Born in the USA, of course. You have Cover Me. There's so many great that you have Darlington County. So many different songs on that album that became huge hits, My Hometown. And the producer asked him to go write one more track, and that's the last track. He wrote that in one evening. He wrote Dancing in the Dark. But this is not going to be the Bruce Springsteen show, although I'd be interested and happy to have it be that. The segment is brought to you by Randall Plumbing. Since 1905, Randall Plumbing and Heating has been an industry leader servicing the Manitoba market. For all your refrigeration, plumbing, and heating needs, commercial or residential, contact Randall Plumbing at 204-775-8406 or online at randallplumbing.com.
Could have used Randall Plumbing last night.
I'm not even going to touch that one. Wow, that's unbelievable. That should be part of it. Anyway.
No, I know how to use it. Just go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
We have a little surprise, Alex. We have a little surprise for you. We've asked a lovely young woman to put together a little song for you, and we're going to play that right now.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr.
Ezra Ginsburg.
Happy birthday to you.
Wow. Wow.
That woman, we don't know who she is, by the way. We don't actually know this person. We're not quite sure why her voice sounds an awful lot like Drew Mandel right in the middle there.
Like, so that was Marilyn Monroe, right?
No, it was somebody covering Marilyn Monroe.
So Drew's voice coming in there is so creepy. That's amazing. I appreciate that.
Dave Manuk of Illegal Curve credit for that audio.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
So happy birthday. That.
No, I appreciate it.
Do rapid fire. We ready for that? You put together a little bit of... We don't know what that was. We'll do rapid fire. No need for sound effects. Earlier this week, it was reported that the Arizona Coyotes have resolved their arena dispute with the city of Glendale, which will keep the team at the Gila River Arena for at least the next two seasons. According to TSN's Frank Saravalli, Arizona would no longer have an out clause in their lease. Is it a foregone conclusion, Ezzy, that the Coyotes will be moving to Las Vegas for the 2017-18 season?
It kind of seems like it is, Richie.
You think they'll move or it'll be expansion to Vegas?
I think there's a good...
Maybe Seattle they're moving. They're going to move. I agree with you.
We know that there was a chance that Arizona was moving to Winnipeg. I mean, that's a fact. So it's not like this is coming out of left field that the Arizona Coyotes could be leaving. I mean, there's 2 years on the lease. The Vegas arena is going to be done within the next, 6 months, 12 months? If you look at pictures,
we were
there, and they build things a little bit more quickly in Vegas than they do in other cities. I think there's a chance that the Coyotes relocate to Vegas. I think that's not. It might not be a foregone conclusion, but I think it's stronger than higher than 50%. I would say Vegas is getting a team in. If it's not the 2017-18 season, it's going to be the 2018-19 season. And so whether it's relocation or expansion, you know, that's a debate, and there's no right answer, I guess. But if the Coyotes can't continue to be in Arizona, Rich, with the amount of fans they have there, they just lose too much money.
Yeah, it's unbelievable that they're actually still there. Earlier this week on TSN, analysts Jamie McLennan and Dave Poulin argued about whether, if the 2005 NHL draft were to be held again today, based on what we know now, would a different player aside from Sidney Crosby be selected first overall, with the obvious choice and only choice to replace him being Carey Price? If you're the GM of an expansion team, who are you taking with your first overall pick, Sidney Crosby or Carey Price?
Well, see, I think that's a better question, Rich, because if you redo the draft and you can't say, well, you wouldn't take Sidney Crosby. I mean, Sidney Crosby was a generational player. I mean, at the time, there was no question that Sidney Crosby was going to go number one that year.
Is that a question now?
Well, I think the question is, because Carey Price has turned into a Hart Trophy goalie, you know, is he a better player now? Or, you know, he was fifth overall that year, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He was a high draft pick.
Yeah,
right?
Bob Gainey surprised many people when he took Carey Price there.
Right, and Carey Price, remember, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, we were talking about Price and Halak in Montreal, and I think we all know who the better goaltender out of those
two
is.
Not everybody was on them board with Carey Price there.
Right.
He got a lot of heat for a long time.
You're right. So I think that if you're starting a franchise now, I think you could definitely make an argument that you start off your franchise with Carey Price and you take him
over Crosby.
Well, I mean, it's hard. Once you don't have a number one goaltender, it's hard to get a number one goaltender via free agency. So I think when you're starting a franchise, I think you would definitely... I think Crosby's a better player. I think Crosby's still the best forward in the NHL.
I just think it's crazy. I'm going to get in on this, Ezzy, because I just think it's crazy that everybody's kind of ripping Crosby these days. Like, when they take Taves over him, when they take Price over him, I don't think any GMs take anybody over
Kopitar
him.
Kopitar went 11th overall that year, by the way.
Yeah.
So I think that's the only other guy in the conversation, because that wasn't a good draft. You know, you talk about how good drafts were. 2003 was the really good draft. That was the year Fleury went. And as you know, Getzlaff and Perry both went to the Ducks in 2003. Parise, those guys.
Crosby's the best player in the world.
He still is, yes. And I think he struggled over the years. And if you look at his numbers, he's still top five in the league in scoring. You know, he didn't win the scoring title.
I'm still taking him first overall every day of the week. I mean, again, now, like, McDavid is going to be that guy now. Okay, you're taking him first because you're building a team because he's going to be playing for 20 years. But in terms of that draft or these players, I mean, it's still Crosby over all these guys, isn't it?
I don't know. Devin Setoguchi maybe at eighth overall that year? Take him.
Earlier this week, Tyler Seguin and Michael Delzato, that's quite a party group right there, were on the set. On set, filming their cameo appearance for the upcoming Goon 2 movie. What is your favorite hockey player cameo, Ezzy, in a movie? Can we even take out Seabass here?
No, it's got to be Seabass. Dumb and Dumber, Cam Neely, I don't even think it's an option. I still actually haven't seen the first Goon movie. I don't know if you've seen it.
I actually haven't either, but I heard it was very good.
Filmed here.
I know, yeah.
Haven't seen it yet, but no, it's got to be Cam Neely and Seabass.
What about the Flyers in, was it This Is 40?
That's right.
Yeah.
Who was in there? Was
I think
it Pronger?
Hartnell was in it.
Hartnell, that's right.
I'm not sure if Pronger, but Hartnell was in it. That's what I recall. Any other hockey? Was anybody in the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie? Remember at the Igloo?
Oh, Face Off.
Yeah. Who was in that?
Hmm.
Eddie Olchek?
Sergei Zubov?
Was Sergei Zubov in that?
Maybe.
Peter Taglianetti?
Phil Bork? I don't know.
Peter Taglianetti. Last question of the week. After Ezzy just killed the segment at the beginning there. Threw everybody off. Drew is currently north of Toronto on a camping trip for one of his close friends' bachelor party. Knowing Drew and his lack of outdoor skills, that's for sure. What are the chances that Drew is eaten by a bear?
Or, contrarily, what are the chances he eats bear? I think, you know, Drew's off this week, as you mentioned, Rich. Let's just hope that Drew comes back alive. Because, you know, he was texting me, you know, about the show. And, oh, you guys, you know, do you need me to do anything for the show? And he was saying, oh, you know, hopefully I return alive and everything.
Yeah, he seemed kind of worried about the whole camping
thing.
Yeah,
well, Drew's a homebody. I mean, Drew's a city guy.
That's right.
He's not someone, you know, I don't even know. He must be funny to watch in a camping environment. He must be, you know, looking for the next closest Starbucks or something. But Hopefully he has a good time, but I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back and he's had the life scared out of him.
Drew be the guy on the trip who, like, when everybody goes to sleep, he cracks into, like, their candy.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, sitting there just throwing it down. That's it. Next week, best dub show. We're picking eight of our best interviews. I think it's eight of our best interviews from the past year. We're going to take some time off and enjoy the August long weekend. After that, we'll be back. Maybe some news on the Bufflin and Ladd fronts. We don't know. But there will definitely be hockey news. We'll have 2 weeks to have something come up. We're looking forward to being back. We hate missing any shows. Thanks for listening today. Thank you to our guests, Dave Pagnotta of the Fourth Period and Mike Colligan of Forbes Sports Money. Thanks to Ezzy for putting together a great show plan. And of course, a happy birthday to Ezzy. Alex Albany doing a terrific job as producer. Drew Mandel will be back in 2 weeks with the rest of us. Hope you have a great Saturday. Blue Jays baseball at 3 o'clock on TSN 1290.